If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. Illinois State Senator Christopher Belt is often at the table during important policy discussions over public safety and education. And on the latest episode of Politically Speaking, Belt discusses how he advocates for the Metro East in a legislature that may be overly focused on Chicago. Belt also talks about the potential effort to redraw congressional lines in response to mid-decade redistricting in Texas and Missouri.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, an in-depth examination of Missouri and Illinois politics.
The instant we got to Illinois, we joined the Green Party. This was 2000.
So I've tried to push for those that I think are honest and really care about the future of the city.
You know, this wasn't a path that I thought I would choose in 2012 when I was able to win the closest Republican victory in the nation.
If it's something that will help Southern Illinois, I'll work with him on it. If there's something he's doing wrong, then you got to fight him on it.
I believe very strongly in the Second Amendment. I believe less government is better, and I believe local control is better.
I choose to fight for working families and for union members.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining me as my co-host today, he covers all things Metro East for St. Louis Public Radio.
Will Bauer.
And joining us in studio, he represents Illinois' beautiful and scenic 57th Senatorial District.
Chris Bill.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Before we pepper you with difficult and hostile questions about your tenure, can you just explain what your district entails in terms of the communities in the Metro East?
So my district encompasses most of St. Clair County, and it spills over into the Venice Township. So that would include Venice, the village of Venice, and the village of Madison. Some interesting things about my district. You know, the oldest college in Illinois is in my district. McKendree College, McKendree University. It was founded in 1829 in Lebanon, Illinois, as the Lebanon Seminary School. The oldest Catholic church west of the Alleghenies is in my district, and that is the Church of the Holy Family. And some have suggested and some have said that it is the oldest consecutively active Catholic parish in the United States.
Wow.
Right,
that's
right.
So when I said it was, when I inferred it was a special district.
It is a special district.
I was not
You were underselling it, Jason.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you were doing before you decided to enter this placid world of Illinois politics.
So I grew up in the Metro East. I grew up in the old Centerville. Now it's Cahokia Heights. I'm the youngest of six. My dad owned a construction company. He is currently a retired local operator engineer from 520. Six of us. I'm the youngest of six. And there again, two of my brothers were local operator engineers from 520. I had a brother before he died. I was a local laborer out of 100, and I have a brother that's local 360, plumbers and gas fitters, and my sister is a retired FOP. I am currently married, been married 29 years to Stephanie Skerlark Belt. I have two wonderful children. I have a daughter who will be 29 this Friday. She lives right outside Dallas, and I have a son that's 26 that lives in the area. I worked, college, I went to Illinois State. I got a bachelor's in history, a BS in history. I got a master's from SIUE in 2001. public administration, and I got a master's in professional counseling from Lindenwood University. I worked 16 years with St. Clair County Probation Department, and then I worked two for Department of Juvenile Justice for Illinois. I was the first ever Central Southern Regional Deputy Director of Aftercare, and Aftercare is what most would refer to as juvenile parole.
And you were also a member of the Cahokia Unit School District Board of Education. How did that experience prepare you before you got elected to the Illinois Senate?
Yes, I was a member there, and I was actually a board president for several years there. It prepared me in that it really made me understand, or it really allowed me to be in tune with the parents, their concerns, their issues, and to listen, right? Just listen. And it really created a skill set in me that I use to this day at the General Assembly. I tell anyone, if you want to cut your teeth in politics, go to the school board.
And you ended up replacing James Claiborne, who was the majority leader in the Illinois Senate. What kind of prompted you to run, you know, for the state Senate and make that transition from local school board, to statewide politics?
Well, James, he was there for 23 years. He was the majority leader. He personal friend of mine. But it was just the wanting to make a bigger impact on a bigger district, right? School board, I was able to affect change in the district, Cahokia Unit School District 187. And running for this office, I could have an impact on the whole state.
So you are the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee that handles spending for public safety and infrastructure.
Yes.
What are some of the priorities for that committee, given that those are two pretty far-reaching terms that could encompass a lot of different things?
So the Illinois State Police falls under, they fall under my committee, right? And so they'll come in and with their budget request, and so the committee will vet them and will ask questions. And I'm happy to say over the last 2 years, we've led the charge. I've led the charge through that committee of getting Illinois State Police the two biggest classes in the history of the organization, right? I think the last one was 100 cadets. They started out making $60,000 a year, and now the starting salary is somewhere around $90,000. And so that's to, you know, make sure that we're attracting the very best officers that we can through the cadet process and then out on the roads. The infrastructure part, IDOT, Illinois Department of Transportation, comes in front of my committee, and the same things happen. You know, they put forward a budget request, and we talk them through why is it such, do you really need this, where will it go, et cetera, et cetera. I also have the Department of Juvenile Justice that falls under that committee. DOC falls under that committee. And so there's a lot of vetting out, if you will, of these organizations and agencies.
I would surmise that when lawmakers are talking about public safety, there's often an assumption that maybe like the focus will be on Chicago or surrounding suburbs, given that there are so many people that live there,
mm-hmm.
And not necessarily the Metro East. First of all, is that been your experience? Are people like hyper-focused on Chicago public safety and not the rest of the state?
You know what? That hasn't been my experience since I've been there because, again, I represent the Metro East, and I'm constantly speaking up about those issues. I also have a counterpart in the House, Jay Hoffman, who speaks up on behalf of the Metro East. In fact, he's actually my state representative. We have Katie Stewart, who speaks up on the Metro East. So that's a very sensitive issue because we fight hard. We speak up to make sure that the Metro East is represented.
I don't know if it's on your radar, but how do you think the Illinois legislature can respond to President Trump's threats to send National Guard or the military into Chicago for crime-related fighting purposes if that does indeed ever happen, like it's happening in Washington, D.C.?
You know, it's difficult because D.C. Is not a city. And by virtue of the fact that he is the president, that the National Guard falls under his purview. But generally, the National Guard falls under the governor's control. And so that will probably be something that will end up in court.
Yeah,
to see how that plays out.
If Trump did that, he would have to be similar to what he did in California, where he nationalizes the National Guard in Illinois and tells them what to do, which I'm sure that Governor J.B. Pritzker is not going to let just stand without fighting it in court. But is there something like, are there proactive things the federal government could do to help from a funding perspective with enhancing public safety? Because like before Trump came into office, at least from my perspective in Missouri, there was a partnership between the two entities. But now, especially in a state like Illinois, which is much different politically than the federal government, I'm imagining the partnership is not really where someone like you would want it to be. So what do you think the federal government could do to be actually helpful here?
The federal government needs to partner with all state, with all governors of every state, red states and blue states as well. There needs to be a partnership if you want to, and a collaborative effort, right? You should work from the federal to the state, to the county, to the local. That should be how it works. And that's, in my experience, those are, when you see that happening, those are the times that we are most effective.
We also wanted to talk about the other Senate committee that you're on, the Education Committee.
Yes.
And especially since budgets in general are less robust than they have been in the past. You know, for example, right this year, one of the big things that cut was the healthcare programs for non-citizens. But maybe around education, how does that kind of affect discussions that you guys are having on the Senate Education Committee around helping schools all over Illinois?
Helping schools all over relative our budget?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So our budget, the governor and his administration, and as well as the General Assembly, we have made a commitment over the last 7 years to make sure that K through 12 is funded. So we do the EBF, evidence-based funding formula, where we give $350 million per year. Those dollars go to the school farthest away from adequacy. And so in reality, those dollars go to the schools that need them the most, to help them with the resources, to help them to get to their students to where they need to be, help with the teachers. And so we've made a move with Smart Start, which is roughly like universal preschool in Illinois. And so we funded that.
Which is like if you could send your
3-year-old to
preschool without having to pay anything.
Right.
Continue.
Right. So those have been commitments that we've made. And even in higher education, we put $10 million in the budget again this year for the MAP grant. We put funding in for the AIM High, merit-based scholarships. And so we've made a commitment in Illinois to make sure our kids have the opportunity to be educated from preschool all the way through K through 12 and beyond.
Do those conversations, though, get more challenging in the future with, you know, maybe the budget is a little more lean like it is this year, or do you feel pretty good about it?
No. Every budget cycle has its own life, has its own rhythm, right? And with the uncertainty of what's going to happen on the federal level, you just don't know, right? And so What we normally look for is every February the governor will make his priorities public. He will do his State of the Union. He will give his budget address, and then outlined in that budget will be his priorities. And then from that moment on till statutorily the last day of May, the legislators can come in and the budget team, and we can look, we can, you know, really try to add our priorities in into the budget and see where we end up.
What do you see as maybe some of the bigger long-term challenges that education policy in Illinois will face over the next maybe decade?
Well, a lot of that depends on U.S. Department of Education. Will it be dismantled? Will it stay dismantled, right? We know that the Department of Education does a lot of things for underserved communities, for children with disabilities. They make sure that their needs are met, right? In areas of civil rights protection. That's the Department of Education. And so with the possibility looming that it will be dismantled, it could be all type of challenges that we're looking for, relatively speaking, within the next 2 years.
And we'll be right back on Politically Speaking with State Senator Christopher Belt. And we're back on Politically Speaking with Christopher Bell. He is a Democrat who represents Illinois' 57th Senatorial District. Will, I think you had a question about legislation that was recently signed into law by Governor Pritzker that I'd like to throw directly to you.
Yeah, and I'm sure you saw 266, I believe, was the number that Governor Pritzker signed last week. 266 bills. One of them that I think of, or that's of local interest, is HB 2987, the Warehouse Tornado Preparedness mm-hmm. Act. And this is the bill that was created by the commission that I believe you were a member of the Warehouse Safety Task Force, which would have formed after the 2021 tornado that killed six people at the Amazon facility in Edwardsville. Anyway, that was a lot. What do you kind of make of that legislation that now the governor has signed into law and will be implemented, I think, 2027?
I think 2027. That, as you stated, that legislation grew out of the task force, which we found it necessary to create a task force to deal with the tragedy that happened with the Amazon and the tornado hitting. And so what we really wanted to accomplish, and I think we did do that, we laid the foundation for the conversation to be had about stronger buildings that will be built in the future, right? Having those conversations, because as we know, climate change is a thing. And we're getting, I mean, we just recently had a EF3, I think, in St. Louis. In what was it, late April, May?
May 16th. Hard for us to forget that day.
And Tornado Alley is shifting east, and we're getting more tornadoes here.
We're getting more.
And not
right?
in Oklahoma or Kansas.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we have to start looking at ways to protect our human resource and the people who work in those facilities. You know, a lot of those facilities were built prior to the shift and prior to the inclement weather, and so they're just not prepared to stand that type of wind. But we need to come up with plans to keep people safe, to keep people alive, and so at the end of their shift, they can go home to their families.
So perhaps the most notable thing about Governor J.B. Pritzker's budget this time around, and Will, please correct me if I'm wrong, was how it clawed back a program that provided health care coverage for immigrants without legal status. And this was not a universally popular idea among Democrats who controlled the General Assembly. What was your general impression of this move, given that, Will, again, correct me if I'm wrong, like this was a $400 million savings, basically, correct?
And it was the result of the budget being, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Senator mm-hmm. Belt, it was just a leaner budget year, and that was one of the extra programs that Governor Pritzker felt needed to go.
It was definitely a leaner budget year. $55.2 billion budget. But it was one of the toughest, leanest budgets that we've had since I've been in. and quite possibly next year could be even worse. I am aware of the cuts. You know, that whole budget cut to what you said earlier was an attempt to cut and save precious dollars wherever we could. You know, that budget, we didn't want to, you know, create fees, create taxes, and we had to cut where we could cut, and that was one of the areas that we cut.
So what is the argument for the state of Illinois paying for the health care of people who aren't in the country legally? Because I could see people who even are not hardline immigration people being like, I don't know why that's a responsibility of Illinois state government. Like, what have you heard the reasoning behind this program?
The reasoning behind the program was, well, first of all, if I may, and level set, and just say the fact that the Texas governor was able to put people on a bus in flip-flops and send them to Chicago in the dead of winter, I just don't know how that was in and of itself illegal. You know, you they come into your state and you send them all over, right? But having said that, it was very difficult legislation. It was extremely difficult to deal with during the budgetary process. As you may know, we have a lot of members who did not like the fact that that was cut out.
Yeah, I mean, I could see people in Illinois not thinking that's the responsibility of a state government to help pay for health care of people that aren't in the country legally. So I could understand. I know that may not be. I know that's not the reason this program was cut. But can you, like, what is it just basically because you feel like the state has a responsibility to make sure that these people aren't being denied health care or something like that?
You know what? I in my district, I get that. And I talk to a lot of people who feel that way. But I can only surmise what the governor would put forth and probably just trying to give some compassion to people who are in this country until, you know, they try to get them some medical care and things like that. But it's a tough, difficult issue, and certainly we need to rehaul and look at our immigration legislation, and we definitely need an overhaul on immigration.
Another thing that I've been paying attention to in Missouri, and I don't know if you've been paying attention to Illinois, is there's a part of what is known as the One Big Beautiful Bill, which I don't think Democrats like calling it that. I think I'm in the minority. I think it's clever branding. But one of the things that has alarmed a lot of people in Missouri is that by 2032, it is going to put very big restrictions on medical provider taxes that are often placed on hospitals that usually help pay for state Medicaid systems. Now, I am not an expert in Illinois' medical provider tax. I don't know if you are, but like, if it goes from 6% to 3.5%, and that's a difference of several billion dollars to help pay for Medicaid, how is Illinois going to deal with something like that, given that, like, you have expanded Medicaid a long time ago, and it's a more generous program than a lot of places in the country?
You know what? It's going to be difficult. It really will. And the Big Beautiful Bill, I'm a Democrat, so I don't see it as the Big Beautiful Bill. That bill is going to close a lot of hospitals in rural areas where they need them the most. As we speak right now, the president is holding $1.9 billion in Medicaid and SNAP from Illinois. And we're talking about lives and medicines and SNAP food, nutritious foods, and, you know, it really could come down to life or death, and we should not play with dollars that could help people live and improve the quality of life for people. Some things should be off limits, and I think that should be one.
Before we transition into talking about redistricting, I wanted to ask you a little maybe campaign question. I noticed Juliana Stratton's campaign put out a list of local officials endorsing her a couple of months ago, and your name and some other Metro East officials were on it, like your brother-in-law, Cokie Heights Mayor Curtis McCall, Fairview Heights Mayor Mark Kupski, Alton Mayor David Goins, have all gotten behind the lieutenant governor in her bid for the U.S. Senate seat that Dick Durbin is vacating. Why is Juliana Stratton your choice, Senator?
Juliana Stratton is my choice. So let me level set. Before the governor came in, before Juliana, his lieutenant, I came in with the governor. You know, Illinois was at junk bond status. Since then, we've had 9 credit increases. Our budget stabilization fund is at $2.5 billion, our rainy day fund. We are continually creating avenues for lower wage earners to go into the middle class through unions. We're strengthening the unions in Illinois. And she has been a part of all of those things. So then the logical question would be, why wouldn't we support her? As you know, Dick Durbin, Senator Durbin, is from East St. Louis. His wife is from the old Centerville. But if we're satisfied or if we're comfortable with the way that we're going, she's a part of the governor's administration, right? So if we give him the credit, along with the General Assembly, along with the president of the Senate, President Harmon, along with Speaker Welch, she also has to get some of the credit. She's been there with him through all of the successes. And we've had a lot of successes. And so I just think she is the one for me. She satisfied my curiosity as far as going forward and giving her the nod. I feel comfortable with that. I have watched her leadership. She was in the House prior to that. And I just think it's not a knock on anyone else. But again, we have tangible evidence of everything that her administration, along with the governors, that they've done. And I want to keep that momentum going.
I think that race for the U.S. Senate seat will be really, really interesting, specifically the Democratic primary, which in all likelihood will be the race, will be decided in March of 2026. So maybe as a political observer, and obviously we know Juliana Stratton's your pick, but like what are you looking out for? What do you think will be the deciding factor in that race, which could be really, really competitive?
It would just, to me, turn up. I know you got Congresswoman Kelly, you got Congressman Raja, and you have Lieutenant Governor Juliana. It just really comes down for me how the turnout in the primary. What does that look like? You know, particularly in the Chicagoland area.
You got three right, Chicago area right, people
right.
up there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so what does that look like? And you know, she's recently had Jesse White to come out and endorse her. She's got Carol Mosley Braun to endorse her. She's got Senator Duckworth to endorse her. She's got the governor to endorse her. She's got former Congressman Bobby Rush to endorse her. So she's got some big endorsements, particularly in the Chicagoland area, that may yield influence and may yield benefits going forward.
Especially if Jesse White is able to get the tumblers to do some tumbling for her.
Oh, those guys are phenomenal.
My favorite thing about being an Illinois native. All right, let's talk about redistricting.
Yes, sir.
Do you think that the legislature should redraw Illinois' congressional map to be potentially even more skewed against Republicans?
Well, in Illinois, we currently hold 14 out of 17 congressional seats. Now, as I say that, I have never witnessed in all my years of living, where a president, because of his drop in poll numbers or the thought that they may not do well next year at the midterm, tells a governor, go find me five more seats. And so we do it. Normally, the way the thing plays out is you get your census every 10 years, and then there's a remap. Who does it mid-decade, right? So to me, this is akin to the phone call to Georgia's Secretary of State saying, hey, I need 11,000 more votes. The guardrails are off now, right? And so I say that to say I haven't heard anything definitively in Illinois about any reaction, right? But I must say that all options have got to be on the table. Because at the end of the day, you're talking about control of the keeping control of the House, keeping control of Congress, the Senate, and passing bills. And the president knows that if the Democrats take control of the House, everything comes to a screeching halt. That's what it's about. And his numbers are dropping. That big, ugly bill that was passed is not polling well. His numbers are tanking. His members' numbers are tanking. And so he goes out and says in mid to tell the Texas governor, and then you have the vice president making trips to Missouri, making trips to Indiana to rally the troops, so if you will, to do the same thing.
I don't know if J.D. Vance has been physically in Missouri, but there's no question that Trump and his staff are asking Missouri to redraw their maps. That's not disputable, but continue.
No, it's wrong, though. It's wrong. It's wrong. And there's rules to engagement. There's rules. There's past practices. We do it after the census that way every 10 years. That way we know what the numbers look like. We've never done that. And so I my answer is we have to keep all options on the table.
What do you make of observers who contend that it's basically impossible to make the current congressional map in Illinois favorable enough for Democrats to win another seat or two?
To make it a 15-2 map versus a 13-3 or a 14-3 map.
I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but like I look at that map and the eye test say it's maxed out for Democrats.
And so the question is, what's the question again?
The question is, like, can you actually redraw the map to get another Democratic seat out of the Illinois delegation?
You know what? Having taken part in the last map remapping, I do know that we had our citizens' input. I do know that, and I sat on several of them downstate where we had citizens' input. And a lot of those ideas were taken. Whether or not, I don't know what a remap would look like, but I am, suffice to say, I am okay with knowing that we took in all the input that we could. We had open portals so people can upload their maps, organizations could upload their maps. And so I don't subscribe to the fact that we gerrymandered anything.
You don't think the Illinois map is gerrymandered against Republicans? Okay, well, let's talk about the 13th district, which I think goes from the metro. Are you in the 13th district or are you
yes.
in the 12th? That starts in the border of Missouri and goes all the way to Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, and is narrowly shaped like basically a snake. You're telling me that wasn't purposely drawn to get Nikki Budzinski elected? Because, like, that kind of stretches credulity, basically.
I just don't. Again, we take in the information that we're given, we hold public forums, we do everything that we're supposed to do, and then we render the maps. But having said all of that, we can agree to disagree on that, but the fact remains to ask a governor to find 5 seats for you mid-decade, what do you call that?
I ask about that because if you ask, say, Missouri Republicans why they're about to embark on mid-decade redistricting, they will basically say, look to what Illinois Democrats did in 2021. Democrats were super aggressive with their map. They got 14 seats out of 17. We need to follow in their footsteps. What do you make of the fact that Illinois is basically being used as a foil to justify this mid-decade redistricting push?
You know what? It's what they do and what they do well. They message well. And instead of denying or telling the president, no, we're not going to do a mid-census remap, they divert and they'll point the finger at Illinois, but it's just a tactic that they're using. Again, they're going to draw the map mid-decade, as Texas will draw the map mid-decade, and they can all point to Illinois if they want, but the biggest issue is that we're breaking, we're removing the guardrails, and we're doing something that we haven't done before, and we're just, it's the Wild Wild West now. You can redraw a map mid-decade at the urging of your president, and they all fall lock, stock, and follow. They genuflex, they kiss the ring finger, but then they'll say, oh, it's Illinois, but the real issue is what you guys are doing. So it's their tactic, and that's fine.
Do you think, or maybe, and I know you don't have any control over whether or not Illinois lawmakers will go back to redraw these maps to make them even more Democratic. But maybe the follow-up question would be, do two rights make a wrong? You know, just because the Texas legislature is going to engage in what I think you would determine is a immoral choice, should Illinois do the same, or should they take the high road and say, no, we're not going to, you know, do any more potentially partisan gerrymandering of the map?
As I stated before, I have not heard anything relative to the state of Illinois doing anything definitively relative to what Texas will do, what Missouri ultimately will do. I haven't heard anything, but I will say all options need to be left on the table.
Let's actually hone in on a point that you made that I think is a good one, like how you're actually going to draw these districts. I imagine that Illinois' constitution requires the districts to be equal in population as possible, correct?
I would imagine. I'm not
yeah,
sure.
That's also Supreme Court precedent, one person, one vote. So any state that does mid-decade redistricting, Texas, California, Illinois, Missouri, they're using data that's 4 years old. How is anybody going to be able to create districts that are of equal population when the data is out of date?
But that's the point I was making.
No, you're making that point. Yeah, I'm actually agreeing.
It should not happen.
I'm actually agreeing
right.
with your point, by the
right.
way. I said it in a very like adversarial way, but that I'm actually agreeing with your point.
But I want to
make that clear.
The only reason that I say you keep all options on the table is there's a new rule to engagement now.
Yeah.
You know, so let's play this out.
Sure.
If you let these, for lack of a better term, these red states do remapping mid-decade and we do nothing, their representation is going to grow and ours will stay stagnant. In fact, we may lose because you're drawing us out the map, right?
Yeah.
And so how is that fair to just sit there and you know what the rules are of this new game and you don't play?
No, that makes total sense. And I think that from a logical standpoint, that makes sense. But, like, let's back up for a second. Are voters the ultimate loser in all of this, given that they're going to...
Voters will be the ultimate loser.
Can we talk more a little bit about that? Because, yeah, like, they're going to be placed in districts that are less competitive than before, and that creates all sorts of incentive structures for members of Congress not to pay attention to them, whether they be Democratic seats or Republican seats. Like, I would like you to address that point.
It shouldn't happen. The voters will be the ultimate losers, right? Because their voices will be... the way the maps are now, they were done within the 10-year after the census, and if you go mid decade, you're going to be cutting out voices for representatives for people, and so ultimately, what you're doing, you're going to be killing the voice, and that may be a harsh word, but you may be muting the voices of people who otherwise had a voice, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a game changer.
Yeah.
It really is a game changer. I don't know what the answer really is, but I can honestly say you have to keep the rules, you have to keep all options on the table because... You know, if you do nothing, and again, their numbers grow, then how is that fair? How is that equitable? How is that, you know, and again, the genesis of all that is dropping polling numbers. The genesis of all that is, the result of the big ugly bill, much of which won't go into effect till after midterm.
Well, there'll be plenty to talk about how that will affect Illinois in decades and years to come. But, Senator, thank you so much for joining us today on Politically Speaking, which, by the way, is a product of St. Louis Public Radio. You can read all of our coverage of Illinois and Missouri politics by going to stlpr.org. Senator, how could people find out more about you on the World Wide Web, social media? Any other place people want to learn more?
Absolutely.
About, you
know? They can go to my Facebook, my social media, State Senator Christopher Belt. They can also go to Christopher Belt for Illinois State Senate. All of those will have the latest and greatest information on them.
Thank you very much. And until next time, so long.
Thank you.
Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.